council introduced the 3-1 gas tax bills that have been prepared by the Subcommittee on Revenue and Taxation. Mr. Huber?
Madam Chairman, during the lunch hour, I did several things. One of them was to investigate the record of passage of bills of controversial nature that was introduced by legislative council themselves. And I find that the record of success in controversial bills introduced by legislative council in the name of the council is dismal. I also find
Do you understand why the motion was made last Saturday and passed?
And also understand that the council standard method here will probably bring attention to all of the matters and all of the committees. So if the chairman would allow me to withdraw the motion, we'll get on with it.
Thank you. Without objection, Senator Huber has withdrawn his motion. In order to accommodate Representative Ostrowski, who is trying to get to plan this afternoon, we'll put back up the list on the agenda for the health planning.
Point of information, I spoke to Senator Pursue on the phone during lunch hour. He's at the airport. His wife is arriving. He's going to attempt to get here before the end of this meeting, probably at 3 o'clock. Says he'll have a short, informal report from the transportation. We'll have more later on in the week.
Thank you. Ms. Ostrowski?
Yes, do you all have before you the final report of the Subcommittee? Is that been the It looks like a lot of the others, but I don't think they got the name of this one. Here they are, health plan. The black book is a backup to the report, obviously. It gives more thorough rundown of all the legislation. This is an analysis of a statewide coordination of the health plan bill. This gives you the tab to show what the section letter transmittal budget summary. The SHCC, I don't know if you're familiar with all these initials, the state trunk coordinating health, statewide health coordinating council, and SHPDA, which I always have to look up again, is the state health planning and development agency. And there are includes a section-by-section analysis of the bill, which the committee went through very carefully this week in two lengthy evening meetings, the including one which was last night. So that accounts for some of the delay in getting our final report typed and as you know, this committee was the outgrowth of a congressional act called the Public Law, the 93641, the National Health Plan and Resources Development Act, which required every state to conform to certain new planning structures. We have devised legislation which does and every conform to what the federal mandate was. It really breaks ground for planning on health on a statewide basis for health, dividing the state into three regions, which was mandated that these be regional. And we have three regions in the state, which we've done for convenience sake, so A, B, and C. And in these regions will be HSAs, health service agencies. The legislation spells out the structure of these agencies, what alterations there are in administrative procedure, clarifies the relationships between the SHPDA, SHP Council, and the HSA agencies. I think I should point out that the committee, in order to get a better background for what was being done in the state, took a sort of trans-Alaska tour of the rural areas, since most of us were urban and weren't aware of what the health delivery systems were in the rural areas. It was very useful to the committee to have on-the-site observations of what is lacking, what is overlapping, what is duplicated, and what is fragmented. These are the kinds of problems that this legislation hopes to eliminate. I have this here, Brian, and I thought you might help us go through in a general outline what this public law, what our new bill provides, and how it changes the health structures of the state. just some outstanding changes that are taking place.
Well, the federal law tries to do coordinated planning and development of services usually provided by federal money. Of course, the federal law addressed federal money. We thought that it would be appropriate to include state money in the process and development process so that better services and higher quality services could be delivered to Alaska. The law reflects most of those changes. What the intent of the bill is to take all the planning functions that are assigned by statute to the Department of Health and Social Services and centralize them. By this, we would hope to eliminate a lot of duplication that Representative Ostrowski was talking about. In addition, there is a major section in the bill called Certificate of Need, which would require that all services using federal or state money be bona fide to be in the public good. To do this, they would have to have a certificate of need. And without that certificate, no money, either state or federal, could be passed to them. By tying these two pieces, the planning and the certificate of need, which is an influence of development of health services together, we hope to end up with a better system, better health delivery system.
We also might add that we are looking at new ways of allocating revenue sharing funds. The committee has not finalized those findings yet, but these problems will be later on handled by the Research Services Division. We have started some groundwork in that area, and we may be recommending, or the standing committees, if they so find, recommending allocation of revenue sharing funds through the regional health agencies rather than through the municipal entities. The certificate of need is a rather complex area in this bill, but I think when it's sifted through the committees, any problem areas in it will be sifted out. Are there any questions?
Are there any questions of Representative Ostrowski? Ms. Tolan?
I noticed a reference here to the statewide. Well, I'm sure this will be
Well, that's the aim, I suppose, a long-range aim. But of course, we didn't get into that. We're on our first steps leading into that.
And I think for the staff of the committees, judging from what was reported last night, I think many have done a great deal of thorough work. It's going to be very helpful to the standing committees in being able to continue addressing.
I wanted to add that myself, Madam Chairman, also, that I would like to commend the heavy staff work that has been done. It's been very commendable. They've worked long and hard hours to have the package we have, even though we weren't able to complete our work within the interim period. We completed as much as was possible, and I think we did take the giant step in getting this one long, complex piece of legislation together. We also looked at long-term care, and we'll be making recommendations through the standing committees on that area also.
Are there any other questions, Ms. Ostrowski? Ms. Ostrowski, do you wish to make a motion of adoption of the report?
I move that the report be adopted and ask for unanimous
consent. The motion has been made, unanimous consent has been asked to adopt, the council accept the report from the subcommittee on health planning. Is there any objection? Hearing none, the report has been accepted. Would you wish to make a separate motion on the transfer of the
funds? That's on the first page of the handout to you. And this outlines the transfer of funds to the council. There is actually an actual total of $116,000. If you'll notice the figures on the uncommitted funds. Encumbered funds, which will be transferred to the Division of Research Services, totals $23,000. And the original total before those were deleted was $143,254.
Turned back that much money?
Well, we actually turned back $116,000. $3,000 is still committed and also $23,300 is being transferred to the Division of Research Services to complete the interim committee work. It's a contract.
You got $150,000. I thought it was $203,000.
We had $212,000 originally.
Yeah.
So we're returning.
$116,000.
$116,000. I move that this report also be accepted. Mass unanimous consent.
Representative Ostrowski has moved the mass unanimous consent that the council accept the recommendations on transfer of encumbered funds to the legislative affairs agency. Is there any objection? Hearing none, the motion is passed. The next report will be on government operations. We want to know if Anderson will report there.
That's it.
We all got the copy of the report. Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the council. I guess most of you know that the Legislative Council created the Special House Fishing Subcommittee serving under the Council's Subcommittee of Governmental Operations, and money was allocated for staff beginning in September of 75 through December 24th of last year. And there's been extensive work done. Mainly, the primary job at the outset was to gather information that has been worked on over the years that other committees and special fishery subcommittees had previous work. And I think most of this information here probably is repetitive. But we do have some recommended legislation for the legislature or the council to consider. And they came out as a result of extensive interviews with fishermen, other legislators, members of the administration, the Department of Fish and Game. There are four bills that we are requesting to be considered. They are in the packet. There's an act relating to security for collection of wages. There's an act relating to transportation of employees. There's an act establishing the Alaska Fishery Impact Fund. And an act relating to the Alaska Fishing Loan Act for the effective date. Since September and then December 24th, we have come up with other recommendations that we felt were not really, we weren't really ready to present to the council at this time. But the initial purposes of the committee were that we investigate fisheries management by the Department of Fish and Game, also to look into emergency openings and closures of fishing areas, to look into very carefully the management decisions that had been made, and also look into escapement policies and how those are established, along with studies of fair prices for salmon fishermen, study of deadlines for fishing negotiations between industry and fishermen, the assembling of fishery information related to the camp salmon industry throughout the state. Now, as a result of some of these goals and objectives that had been set up before us, we did ask the Special Committee on Taxation and Revenue to assist us in several endeavors, one of which was the possibility of increasing the state revenue from fisheries products that are exploited from the state of Alaska and its waters, and also to look into the possibility of how there might be an increase in the production of salmon as it relates to escapement policies and management decisions, and finally to determine whether or not there's a way of getting at a fair and reasonable price per pound of salmon based on the true value of salmon. We also dealt with several aspects of the fishery industry, including rehabilitation, extended jurisdiction, sport fishing, predator control, forecasting accuracy, labor problems relating to fisheries, the future of the fisheries, etc. And based on my earlier statement that there were several areas that we felt we were not prepared to make any specific recommendations on, we will be coming up with additional recommendations through the standing committee. And in addition to that, thinking very seriously that the standing committee could probably develop a special fisheries subcommittee so that this kind of work can continue. I believe it's a long-term effort. I believe the report speaks for itself. It isn't what I would consider in its final form, but I hope the council and other legislative members will take time to go through it.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Are there questions, Ms. Anderson, concerning the report? Mr. Brown. The motion has been made and unanimous consent has been asked that the report presented by Mr. Nels Anderson be accepted by the council. Is there any objection? Hearing none, the report has been accepted. Thank you very much.
Madam Chairman.
Mr. Bradner.
Very little money was allocated to the committee, but I'm not sure if anything remains. I would make a motion that if there is unexpended funds, that they be returned.
Would you prefer to wait until we have the fiscal report at the end of all of these on every committee?
Fine.
Or if you prefer, we'll go ahead and have a vote up now. But that Mr. Charney is here to give us the breakdown on all the committees and what is left over, et cetera. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Telecommunications, Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There is in front of you, I believe I've given to each member of the council, another thick document. I apologize if there are any errors in the collation of it, but I found that the one copy I had two copies of Professor Stanley's report attached rather than what you should have before you is approximately a 12-page report from me summarizing very briefly the activities of the council. Also, I apologize to the chairperson about one thing. I hope that I'm not disturbing anyone. I asked her just before the lunch break if she'd received a memo that Larry Davis assured me he was going to get to before the...
It was in my box.
Oh, it was. Okay. He gave me some copies to pass out to council members. It addresses an issue that will come up later on, but not at the time of my report in any way. But included with that is also a copy of the contract with the consultants. And then copies of letters which are going out now and will be received on Monday by the chairman of the two rules committees. Cover letter with each of the bills we are suggesting be presented. In addition to that, there should be included reports to me, which I'm forwarding, and also I'll also make copies of all of this available to all members of the legislature from the two consultants, Professor Stanley, who's been based out of Anchorage, Professor Marina Fairbanks. If we were to give a full report of what we did during the interim, it would probably be 700 pages long. No, I couldn't read it. There are many.
You've been getting it in installments.
You've been getting it in installments. Some of what's attached to this, as a matter of fact, are at least some of the monthly installments that were presented by the 22 consultants. We happily had a quorum of the committee at every regular meeting, one held in July, Fairbanks, one in October, and Anchorage, one in November in Barrow, and one in December in. We probably attempted to get into too broad a range of activities for considering our resources and all that, but I'm sure you've heard about some of the things that were going on. some of the things that we could not have anticipated happening were the accelerated controversy regarding the applications of before the Federal Communications Commission of the RCA companies. And at my request, Professor Stanley went to Washington, D.C., and as I indicated to the court, dealt with Jack Pettit, who is the excellent attorney for the state of Alaska before the Federal Communications Commission, retained by the DOP, and represents the DOP, the Governor's Office of Telecommunications. And at a time, there was a time when we felt that the differences then remaining between the state and the RCA companies could be resolved, that is, those differences that are represented by those FCC cases involving applications to satellite authority and other authority. And Professor Stanley, in person, and I, by telephone, directly participated in negotiations with the involving our input. I felt this was necessary because, in a way, I felt that one of the parts of the charter of the subcommittee was the resolution that was passed by the legislature in February that was directly addressed to the pending FCC applications. And I think that we had to make sure that the administration continued to follow the position that we believed that the legislature had expressed a view on. And in fact, I'm happy to report that the administration and the legislature seem to still be in agreement on this one area with all the other things we talked about where we're in such vast disagreement. It's like nice to find at least one area where this is true. The negotiations did not succeed. The attempts to gain an agreement from the RCA companies did not occur, and as a result, the matter did go to the commission, and the commission handed down some decisions in which they postponed consideration on some matters, and on the matters that they did decide, we and the administration believe were decided very much in favor of the state of Alaska. To some extent, we were surprised in that they went far further than we expected. And I'm sure that you've seen quite a lot about that in the public press. Something that got less publicity was our looking at various state agencies that directly relate to telecommunications. And to some, but believe it or not, this ended up dovetailing back to matters regarding telecommunications and also regarding the activities of Long Island Carrier. We visited the offices of the APUC, the AEBC, the Division of Communications, the Department of Public Works in Anchorage. On almost all occasions, I was able to have a quorum of the subcommittee on these field trips, in addition, there was one exception, in addition to quorum at the meetings. And also, we appreciated the participation at some of these field trips by members, other members of the legislature, including the chairman of the House Finance Committee and several others. And it means an awful lot. He's not here, but I'd like to give him a compliment anyway. It means an awful lot to a subcommittee of the legislature to be able to walk into a state agency and have the House Finance chairman along with you. They do pay a little bit more attention to you than they might otherwise. One of the things we found out, and a major portion of our legislative proposals addresses this, is that the APUC really has not been able to do its job in the way in which we thought they were doing it. And as a matter of fact, this legislation in a way comes directly by request, I suppose, in a formal request, by members of the commission in a meeting that we had with them in that was, I think, on the same morning as a council meeting in August, I believe, in Anchorage. And that is that they do not have anyone making a regular presentation before the Alaska Public Utilities Commission in this very, very specialized area of administrative law, which involves complicated legal matters and complicated economic matters, of making a presentation on behalf of the lowest practicable rate under all the circumstances. There's not an advocate that's in the proceeding. And for this reason, we have proposed the creation of a division or a section, because that would be consistent with the way in which they're organized, a section on communications carriers that would actually have this responsibility to advocate for the lowest practical rate. The problem is that as it is now, their staff goes ahead and provides an awful lot of background information and does do staff work, but seems not to feel that this advocate role is theirs, and of course it's not in the statutes. The result is that the commissioners get a rate proceeding for them. They give the usual public notice of the rate proceeding, and then they decide it. They have to decide it within the record,
And they may walk away from the case suspecting that the rate should have been lowered, but there has been no one other than the companies who have been able to make this very sophisticated presentation to the APUC. And if they just followed their hunches and went below the rates that are stated or justified in any way in the record, they know that they're immediately going to be reversed by a court. So this is the justification for establishing this. There would be an agency, an arm of the APUC, whose responsibility would be to help them make this record so that they'll be able to decide it on the widest possible range of evidence and not just that offered by the carrier. At a time when RCA has just recently made application for a 35% across-the-board increase in intrastate toll charges, this is a very important matter. One of the things that bothers me is, unfortunately, considering, as I state in the report, unfortunately, considering the timing of the way in which legislation goes, by the time we get anywhere with the legislation, it may be too late as far as that proceeding is concerned, because that's not, that's almost like an emergency proceeding for the APUC. So while we're considering this legislation, it may be, and I may be personally, or if the subcommittee continues to function as I hope it does, the subcommittee may ask that there be a special appropriation made either to the Department of Law or to the Governor's Office of Telecommunications to serve this function with you now with respect to the RCA application, which is one of the major cases that the APUC has had before in the last few years. Also included in our bill recommendations relate to the small telephone company exemption. Now, this exemption was put in by previous exemption from regulation by the APUC. This exemption was put into the law by previous legislatures, in part because it was felt apparently that small companies were not in a position to hire an expensive administrative law lawyer like Jack Stern in Anchorage and make the appropriate constant filings before the APUC. And one of the problems is with the establishment of the smaller stations, 20 of which are being installed now, I think there are now 42 definite locations for ones that will be established in the coming months of this year and into the construction season, and be a total of 120 of them, that many areas have had no communications at all are suddenly going to have reliable, we hope, 24-hour a day, 99% reliable communications with the rest of the world, and they may only have one telephone hanging on the end, unless a local telephone company is established or some entrepreneur comes in. One of the problems that can be caused by this is that you can have a wide variation in the technical standards of the signals that are required to be plugged into the worldwide long-distance telephone network. If the exemption for the small telephone companies remain, then no one has the authority to tell them what they must do in order to meet the technical standards for the purpose. So we ask that the exemption from regulation be lifted, but only with respect to technical standards and not with respect to rates, partly because rate proceedings are highly complicated, and they are usually the sorts of proceedings for which you need the expensive talent in an administrative proceeding. And one of the parts of this bill that I think may help quite a bit is that it's made the responsibility of the long lines carrier to bring violations of these signal standards, technical standards, to the APUC. This accomplishes two things. One of them is that it makes sure that RCA doesn't get blamed for it, but also it makes sure RCA does not unjustly blame some small ma-and-pa telephone company somewhere in inquiry to a complaint about service and say, well, it's not us, it's them. If it's them, then they will be required to report that to the APUC. And in a way, it gets the advantage of a private company in a way to help us do public regulation. And this is in their interest, and as a matter of fact, Mr. Heller, I don't know if he likes this provision of the bill, but he mentioned to me several times that he was concerned that there were no standards about the companies that they must hook up to in the various small areas. And of course, as a common carrier, they must hook up if there isn't the existing law distance, or the existing telephone exchange. There are provisions in the present law which require, which provide an exemption from regulation by the Alaska Public Utilities Commission for municipally owned utilities. Now, at least as far as telephone is concerned, me and to the members of the subcommittee, this is completely indefensible because this means that the two largest telephone companies in the state of Alaska
of local telephone exchanges, the Fairbanks Municipal Utility System and the Anchorage Telephone Utility are not at all regulated, or at least they're, the extent is, that's incorrect, the extent of their regulation is substantially less. And the exemption is not a clear one. It relates to the extent that one or is or is not in competition in certain areas. It was intended to have a certain scope by members of the legislature who that passed it. I've talked to some of them. And then the Supreme Court came out with a case very much broadening its effect. We propose that that municipal exemption be repealed, at least with respect to the regulation of telecommunications carriers. In addition, and dovetailing into the idea that the APUC be given a branch that would advocate for the lowest practicable rate, we also include a bill that would add to the standards of decision by the APUC that one of their major goals is to determine the rate that would be the lowest rate that would still give a reasonable return on investment. This kind of language is used in the administrative charters of many agencies that do this sort of thing across the country, and certainly should cause no harm. It should make it clear in the mind of presidents and future commissioners that this is one of the major ways in which they represent the public interest. That one bill is not limited to regulation of telecommunications simply because it seems entirely impractical to do that and that it seems to cause no harm to generalize it. We felt that our jurisdiction has been in the area of telecommunications, and of course the APUC regulates everything from, it's not, I keep saying the delivery of garbage, but it's a collection of garbage, everything from the collection of garbage to electric utilities and everything else. So our other bills, at least as presently drafted, and as they will be delivered to the chairman of the two rules committees, except for that one I indicated, are limited only to matters relating to the regulation of telecommunications carriers, but with a suggestion in the letter that it may well be that it's the wish of the legislature, and it may come up in committee, to broaden these applications to apply to a much wider range of regulatory activity of the Alaska Public Utilities Commission. Present sees us doing several things. This last legislature did pass a major resolution which, unlike other resolutions, actually had a substantial effect in the views of most observers, relating to, as I said before, to the cases pending before the Federal Communications Commission. It would no doubt be very helpful, in my view at least, that this be done again, because many of these same cases are still pending and their procedures are very different. Our last meeting that we've had up until now was on December 9 in this building, and at that time those of us in attendance decided that it was not appropriate for us to recommend a resolution because things changed so fast before the Federal Communications Commission that by the time the legislature had convened, it might be that the resolution that we proposed might be entirely out of date. And one of the things that we wish to do is to continue in these activities, get in touch with Mr. Pettit in Washington, D.C., and the people from the Governor's Office of Telecommunications, and determine what might be an appropriate resolution for the legislature to pass in the public interest of the state of Alaska related to those applications. The consultants, Professor Merritt is here now and will be available to anyone if they have any questions about some of the activities. We have also really been kind of a public information arm regarding telecommunications. We've tried to reply to virtually any inquiry along these lines, whether it came from legislators, which of course got first priority, public bodies, I think the Fairbanks Town and Village Association made some inquiries, and Professor Merritt just came back from a meeting of the AFN Subcommittee on Telecommunications. They established, I believe, their convention, which has been requested by the Governor's Office of Telecommunications to be directly involved in the decisions regarding things like placement of smaller stations and many other things. I have a lot more to say on this, but many of you heard much of this before, and we'll hear much of it again. The report is very lengthy and should be able to speak for itself. One thing that concerns me very much is that we need to continue our activities in one form or another, and I'm very, very concerned about this issue, and there have been various different methods mentioned informally in conversations by members of the council in the last few weeks in this regard. At a later time, I'm going to be making a motion, which I hope takes into account some of the problems that have been raised recently in discussions regarding the prerogatives of the presiding officers of the two bodies that might be consistent with the existence of the session and also the prerogatives of the standing committee chairman. I've discussed this with most of you at one time or another during this past week. I'll hold the motion for a while and I'll pass it out. I do know that there are other reports yet to be given, and I know that Senator Pertula hopes to give you a short presentation on the Transportation Subcommittee, and then I will make the motion. For now, I will move and ask unanimous consent that the report of the Subcommittee on Telecommunications of the Alaska Legislative Council be accepted by the Council.
The motion has been made, unanimous consent has been asked. The report of the Subcommittee on Telecommunications be accepted by the Council. Are there any objections? Hearing none, the report is accepted.
I'm going to pass out a copy. Excuse me, I'm sorry. I'm going to pass out a copy of this motion, but I'll make it at a later time. Senator Chance, I had lunch with Senator Willis today. It would be good to be here, but he's already submitted a written report, as I understand, but which is very science. Senator Willis, if you have, always the most unanimous consent that his report on mortuary science be approved or adopted at the individual.
Have the copies of that been passed around?
No. Madam Chairman, I'm concerned that by the time that all these reports are handed out, this end of the Capitol is going to start tipping down.
This is mental health.
Was this the place to start it?
Was the one on mortuary science?
Yeah, just dumped here and then not on the road. Here they are.
About a mistake around.
Hold
on, the one on mental health and mental retardation that will come up.
I got lobbied at lunch. What hell do you talk about? What?
The motion has been made, the report be accepted. Are there any questions? Mr. Bill Barrier of the agency, who was the staff assigned to this task force to work with Senator Willis, is here to handle any questions. If there are no questions, are there any objections to the motion? The motion to accept the report. If there are no objections, the report has been accepted. Thank you, Senator. We're workers' compensation, Senator Frost.
Madam Chairman, this committee was appointed sometime after the other interim committees were appointed. We started with an analysis of the increases in the workers' compensation rate, what were due to legislation passed in 75, what in 74, and what was due to experience. The committee held hearings in both Anchorage and Fairbanks, and there's a summary of that, those hearings that's available, as well as the analysis of the impact, as well as legal opinion with regard to possible changes, and several other reports or analysis of the problem. The only thing that is being distributed at this time, even though the other information is available, will remain on file, and I have one copy of it here, is the summary of the suggestions of the committee. We have a draft bill, there's one section of the bill that we're waiting to attempt to obtain some cost figures on, and then we plan to introduce the bill, but there will be a couple of days before we have that information. Basically, the bill that is being proposed by the committee takes one of several approaches that were being considered with regard to the reduction of benefits paid to the employees who do not reside in the state of Alaska. We found that taking that approach is the area in which the biggest reduction in premiums can be anticipated without reducing the benefits that are paid to Alaskan workers. The approach of the committee will retain intact all of the benefits being paid to a bona fide resident of the state of Alaska, but reduce the benefits paid outside or to workers who actually reside outside the state. The increase that was a result of Senate Bill 146, which passed in the last session of the legislature, was approximately 26% statewide. The proposal of the committee would be that benefits paid to people residing outside the state would be a percentage of the benefits that they would be entitled to if they lived in Alaska, and that would be a ratio based on the average weekly wages of the state where they reside versus the average weekly wages of the state of Alaska. The average weekly wage of the state where they resided was the same as the state of Alaska, then their benefits would be the same. If not, it would be reduced proportionally. Our best figures indicate that a minimum 13% reduction in premiums would be affected by this approach. We've been assured by the Legislative Affairs Agency that the approach is constitutional. We feel it's practical from an administrative point of view. The remaining item that we're waiting cost figures on.
Excuse me, Doug, would you repeat that again? The 13%, what does that represent?
That would be a reduction in premium. The cost
that the employers would presently pay, and they would pay 13% less.
Less, right. Or stated another way, the cost impact of Senate Bill 146 in the last session of the legislature, if this new legislation were passed, would be about half of what it was this year as far as future years are concerned. The indication that we have received from both the Workman's Compensation Board under the Department of Labor and the various carriers in the state processing claims indicate that on the average 50% of the injured workmen receiving benefits reside outside the state of Alaska. So the premium impact of the committee's approach will be rather substantial. The one remaining item which we have not costed out relates to a change in the death benefits. We believe, prior to the time we want to put it in the bill, we believe that we can probably obtain a premium reduction by increasing the so-called Bowery that's paid at the present time at 2 years total compensation to a widow upon remarriage. We believe that if you increase that to 5 years compensation, there may actually be a reduction in the premium resulting from death benefits. We have checked as best we can with the National Bureau, and there is some question, as probably all of you have heard, as to the accuracy of the Bureau's figures as a result of the hearings conducted by Commissioner Motley and Mr. Block. The for leaving insurance earlier.
That if you reduce the death benefit in terms of the percentage increase from 90% total down to something like 62/3, you're talking about an extremely small premium reduction, probably less than 2%. So the approach we were considering, in light of the fact that there have been at least suggestions, if not allegations, that the high death benefits would cause people to live together without the benefit of marriage, but with the benefit of workers' compensation, to see what effect the increase of the dowry might have from an actuarial point of view. And the draft of the bill, I expect, will be ready in a couple of days. And the backup documents, which are some several inches high, will be available if any of the council members would like to build one. But at this time, I would move that the report that you have before you be accepted.
The motion has been made unanimously passed. Is there an objection to checking the report on the subcommittee on working compensation? Hearing none, the report has been accepted. The task force on children's code revision has also been one of the cooperative efforts between the executive branch and the legislative affairs agency. The report is there. There are one or two suggested revisions on current statutes. The legislative affairs agency is providing the legal research and services for the task force. The task force is provided by the executive branch.
Is anyone going to make the presentation on
selection and retention is also another area that has been done basically by the staff and pulling together all of the various studies and reports that have been made by different bodies and agencies on judicial selection and retention for the use of the two standing committees, judiciary committees. That information is available. I don't think there is any legislative expense on that. The mental health and mental retardation is one that was passed out a few moments ago, just ahead of mortuary science. This one was, the expenses on this were taken care of under the health committee budget of Representative Ostrowski, Representative Clark Greening, undertook the responsibility of the legislature to work with two task forces, a task force on drafting a mental retardation act and one to draft a mental health code revision. The problem that we have faced ever since the initial mental health and mental retardation title chapter was adopted as first state legislature adopted the Oregon statute in toto, and the two populations, those involved in mental illness and those involved in mental retardation, require different types of treatment from the, not only in services, but according to the law, and they have been tied together. What the task forces are doing is trying to separate out the two and have a separate chapter on mental health so that it can be dealt with without having to confuse mental retardation with it, and another title on mental retardation so it can be dealt with without having to confuse it with the short-term aspects of mental illness. The one bill is already prepared, the other one is still, I believe, in the final drafting stage, the one on developmental disabilities.
Madam Chairman.
Mr. Brown.
With the report that you summarized just now, is it necessary or appropriate to make a motion to accept them also?
Yes, it would be. We do have the written report with attached legislation that will be introduced at standing committee.
Madam Chairman, I would move and ask unanimous consent that the remaining written reports that have been handed out to us, you have summarized, be accepted by the council.
Motion has been made, the unanimous consent has been requested. Is there any objection? Hearing none, the reports are accepted. The ones that we do not have reports on so far are corrections to the last ones. Criminal code revision. Do we have anything on that?
No, that would be probably a power commission report, and I just got their good report on it. I'll build sometime later this month. Or is it February, I forget.
I have not heard. February was the time. Was the time last time I talked to John, it was a month and a half, but since I talked to John,
and transportation, and we're still expecting Senator Kutula. Did he indicate that he wanted to make an oral report or his written report would be?
No, I think he said that his written report and materials would be available later in the week, and he just wanted to give us kind of a brief oral report when he gets I just had a note from him saying I'm at airport still waiting for overdue Alaska Airlines flight, may not be in until 3:30 p.m.
Forget it.
I don't know what that means. He won't be in here until 3:30, or the airplane won't be in there until 3:30.
There is another item under other business relating to these reports, and I'd like to call on Mr. Charney at this time for the fiscal report on MM activities for legislative council and such.
Mert, I have some informal information when I get to the telecommunications.
Chairman, I'm sorry I wasn't here this morning, but what is the status of the criminal code revision?
That's just what we were asking about, and I think it would be February before that prepared to.
That's the Havelock subcontract, isn't it?
That's the Havelock. I'm sorry,
technically, that's not really a subcommittee of Krause, it was established by a resolution.
Well, it was established by resolution of council to
establish,
create a Blue Ribbon Commission, as it's referred to.
So it's a little different from these other subcommittees.
Commission, whatever that means.
Yeah, so even if the other subcommittees were disbanded, that one would still be on the council.
I'm sure members of the council, I am handing these out hopefully in the same order as they appear on your agenda. The first one you have before you is the financial report for the Coastal Zone Management and Fisheries Subcommittee. The basic total information is on the last page. They were allocated in a total of $20,000. They have expended $15,068.95. Leaving a balance of $4,931.05. We do not know of any outstanding encumbrances or any late bills. We believe this is the final report for the subcommittee.
Yeah. Right.
We believe this is the final financial report. We know of no other outstanding bills that have not been paid as of today.
And maybe I'm all off here, but I noticed that under Representative Hershberger, he's just shown for one period there, and didn't he go to Barrows with the intern?
We have one of these for every subcommittee?
We have two travel for him, August and October.
Last week,
missing what I was looking for in America. It was under travel. Finally.
Thank you. Mr. Attorney, I wonder if we could just have all of them passed out at one time or hand out to them instead of trying to go through them one at a time.
Oh. Okay.
That's what I.
Wow.
Give me the next batch and I'll be the next.
I'll just send them while they're passing them out and I'll refill my coffee cup.
I didn't know how much.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, kid, leave me a copy of it.
Four months.
Okay, I'll put that down. This goes on.
Oh.
Yeah, those two.
Oh, yeah.
Like, hopefully.
If you'd like the federal government, we found we could get really funny. You got me nervous there for a while, Chancy.
They aren't subcommittees, I guess. Oh, okay.
Task force issue,
though. Oh, task force. Oh, I see. Okay.
Madam Chairman, we're almost starting to convene almost.
Why don't we shut that on our budget? Oh, we had a paper somewhere around.
Yes.
Sure, they're all in reverse order. They're just thick out there.
We go with this one up here.
I guess all of them are because they're. Yeah. They spent money, yeah, that's right. Yeah, and that's the difference.
Well, I think
you
just agree on that.
Well, I
just gave one more of your seat there.
Yeah, here you are.
Okay. You're setting it up? Here, I'll put this on the top. I'm not sure what it's about, but it's important to know. Yeah, they should be all cross-hatched, like a problem.
No, I don't know where I am at. You want these, right? Council? Where am I?
You're supposed to be on management.
You might think this is a lot of paperwork, but at least everybody, now with the accounting system installed, can know exactly where everybody stands. lot, it doesn't have to be any hassle about whether or not we know what money has been spent or the public or the press, and have access to it without worrying about whether or not it's suggested.
For which Mr. Charney is to be applauded.
Well, I'm sorry for the confusion that you guys, I didn't know how, so I had, instead of having them out in sets, I had them each subcommittee, so it caused all the confusion.
That's all right. This is the result now of the accounting system that council requested back early in the summer, and was now installed. Has been computerized. My understanding, there will be a monthly printout, Mr. Charney, like with the administration on.
Yes, we're getting monthly reports in total. The detail, of course, that we prepared for you does not come out on the computer. When we compile the detail and then balance it back to the summary report that comes out by the computer, so that we are in balance with the IBM reports. But we, especially for the interim committees, the last few months, we have listed them out in detail, showing the dates and everything, so that there would be no question. And when any subcommittee chairman could question the charge of the might have erroneously gotten the wrong account.
And the system was set up in such a way that each individual legislator also has a code so that they can be the
yes, we have
running expenses for each legislator.
Right. I'm not sure how that particular project ledger is working right. I hear a lot of complaints from my accountants on that particular phase of the project account, the project ledger, and they've been working with the department administration trying to smooth that particular one out, because there has been some conflict in that particular project ledger not working yet.
Mr. Miller?
Yes, up until, I suppose, January 1st or what date? This represents a total of all the council monies that have been spent during the interim, is that right?
That has been expended or that we know is outstanding.
Oh, yeah, expended or encumbered. This is
from
the whole
July 1st, right? July 1st to January 15th.
January 15th, thank you.
So look for your subcommittee report there, and if you spot any expenses that you are aware of that your subcommittee has encumbered that they are not included, let's Mr. Brandon?
Madam Chairman, I believe what you were getting at was that at a certain point, once all the accounts are in, you know, she will be able to put out to those people who are always interested, you know, how much any one of us spent. You know, somebody's eye can have to lead through all the reports and add us all up. It'll all
That's
be
right.
there, and at a certain point, it'll be laid on the member's desk. So,
that was a project report I was asking about.
We have done that for tax purposes in order to have the W-4s prepared for the legislature, so we have already done that and combined them and put them together.
I just want to be able to have that available as a running total throughout the year. Mr. Cross.
I think the council also doesn't reflect the PR books that we were issued.
You reported those PRs to the office?
It doesn't show me with any travel, and yet I have used the PR. There's some of them that I have given to other people. So I don't know whether that should be done differently.
At an earlier council meeting, it was decided that when you issued the TR, you'd send the carbon copy into the agency so that they would know that it was encumbered.
I must have missed that particular thing because I did do it, and it shows me with my travel. Now, some of the travel that I authorized shows up in other places.
Mine does, too.
Yeah.
I think the staff was reading the TRs when they came in, and when they sent in their per diem request, said what it was for, then just assign it in to that code. I noticed some that I did likewise in the last per TR, and apparently assigned it to a category.
Yeah, several of my TRs out of my book went to other people, and then a note on the TR is what it was for, and then when I sent the carbon copy into the accountant, they put it in the proper code.
Madam Chairman.
How long does it take to get the copy back from the airline? Or is it eventually that comes back to MERS?
Yes, and it'll vary by the airline or by the travel agency, how fast they bill. Some of the small travel agencies, I don't know how they operate on a cash basis, but sometimes the billings can be as much as 3, 4, 5 months before they'll get around to billing the state. Others, Wien Airlines is one that's very slow in billing, for instance. I don't know, they must have a problem somewhat with their accounting system because they're very slow in billing. Others are very fast. You can get, you guys can get the billing within a week or two of the time the TR was issued.
That's why at that meeting, Mert was saying if they had a copy of the carbon copy of the TR, or if they'd issued a TR out of Juneau and hadn't been used, the legislator let them know, the next week was told that amount from the check sent to the airline, and that they would keep their records up to date.
That's on the refunds. But that's why I qualify this expenditure report, because it's the travel that we know of. You know, next month I might get another bill in from a travel company that where a TR was issued, which we don't know today. But the legislator issued a TR a month ago, and we don't know about it. We get the bill 2 months from now, and it'll show up. We'll have to, of course, pay the bill. So that's why I qualify every one of these statements is based on the expenditures that we know of as of today.
So any of you who have TR books, please notify them immediately as to the TRs that were issued out of it.
In other words, turn in your yellow slip.
That's right. There is a little log in the front of the book that you can keep a record for yourself. And then if you tear off the yellow sheet, the carbon copy, and give it to the accountants, then they can mark it down as encumbered funds. It was Ms. Tolan and Ms. Brown.
Madam Chairman, I wish to, I don't know whether to ask the attorney or what, but all of the charter was on the course was on which I believe that I had marked the TRs with what legislators were traveling on. They're all credited to my travel, and somebody's going to offer me a Lear jet to take this thing.
The billing did not come down as, you know, the breakdown. We didn't arbitrarily split it. In other words, it came down as a lump sum billing to include travel for these many people. And of course, with you properly authorized the TR, and perhaps that we could have been, we should not have probably had that under your name, probably should have had that in a separate grouping itself.
Yeah, committee travel.
You can believe me, I was not alone.
Could you ask your accountants to break that up, Mr. Chiney, so that it would not all be under the Capitola name?
Sure.
Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. There are a couple of matters that I thought that I had worked out to get the proper information to Pat Costello on the telephone last month or the month before, but they do not show up in the accounting on the telecommunications subcommittee. Some of these things she may not know about. I'll just briefly mention them and Mert can take account of them. She may already have notes on them. I don't know. First of all, one thing that just to me looks like an omission, I don't know why, it shows there's no showing of per diem for me for the October meeting, which I believe is October 22nd. I believe I was paid for that. I don't know why that's occurring. You might make a note of that. I think it was one day's per diem in Anchorage. Also, I don't know whether Representative Wallace has submitted any per diem requests at all, but he did attend two meetings, one in Barrow, one in Juneau. And also, he never received any of the TRs that were sent to him from Juneau for these various meetings. So on the two occasions when he could come to the meetings that weren't there, one of them was in Fairbanks, he didn't need a TR. I gave him two of mine, and I thought I had told Pat about that, which should show travel. And I don't know, but I think I gave her the numbers to so she could balance it between the two accounts, so it should have shown up as telecommunications.
What about Mr. President. And the only other matter that I have...
Point of order, Senator Ziegler.
Is there any reason that Representative Brown can't take this up with Mr. Charney personally instead of going through the whole council?
Madam Chairman, that was the last item of that kind I have. I have another item that is of interest to the council. And that is that included in the telecommunications report is a breakdown that actually shows what has happened to the encumbered funds in the contract. I'll admit that I did have a dispute with Senator Tillian about the honor of the University of Alaska, but I'll admit that my views in that area do not usually extend to the way in which they control their money internally. And for reasons not known to me, they apparently have not billed the agency in the way in which they should have. And I just was involved in having some nasty phone calls to make sure they will. But in lieu of their billing, the consultants did provide us with a complete breakdown of what the fiscal status is right now. The results are summarized in the report saying that the actual amount for expended, even if not yet filled by the university yet, is approximately $72,300, leaving a balance for the remainder of the fiscal year approximately $78,000. And there is a letter that I have prepared which is going to the chairman of the copy of the attorney, giving a detailed breakdown on that, which we hope will coincide with the billing of the university when we finally get it.
The people concerned about items being listed under their names, for which there is no explanation, I wish to point out that there's one under my name that says R&R deposition that has nothing to do with risk and relaxation.
I was going to ask you what R&R is doing for another
two. I asked around this morning to find out what it was, and it was a legal secretarial service to transcribe committee meetings, I mean council meetings during the summer, and it was done under my authorization, so that's why it goes under the billing. I couldn't imagine what the R&R authorization was. R&R secretarial
R&R.
Are there other questions or corrections that you wish to bring to Mrs. Money's attention? I wish to also point out that I think the records are closed on that Western Conference meeting, and it shows that of the $50,000 that was appropriated to council for this, we only spent
$14,483.70. That was the appropriate time.
Some of us found out by talking.
If there is no other business, we'll stand in adjournment till next Saturday at 10 o'clock when we're going to the budget.
Did you have something else to say to Jeannie?
I was just going to bring up the fact that I've got to see that.
Oh, yeah.
I've got those things that I haven't charged with any committee.
Maybe.